Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kevin Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. Kevin, the Cardinals are the greatest team in the world. They beat the Cowboys 38-10. The city is buzzing. Can you feel it?
I love the memes, as Stephen A. says. There have been great ones to come out of this week. So,
does he really call them memes?
Yes, there's an audio. I found a YouTube of an hour of him repeatedly saying memes, and that's like an hour of audio. That's all it is.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so we are officially under a month away from the draft. It is October 20th, recording this today on a Tuesday afternoon. We have the draft on November 18th. So if you have not been listening the past couple of weeks, shame on you, and you're going to be doing this out of order because we have already gone through the wings that are going to be in the Suns range at number 10 in this draft class that we believe at least that are going to be in their range. And then the guards as well, more specifically point guards. So again, the way we've been talking about this past couple of weeks is if you haven't been paying attention to the draft, you're trying to get like in draft mode, this is our best way of doing it both for ourselves and for all of you listening and reading our stuff. So we hope it's been doing the job so far. We seem to have been getting pretty good feedback on it. We're going to round out with the big men today. There are a couple of things I have to cite before we get into it. We've been kind of sticking to this formula of the three guys that are going to be in the Suns range are like most likely that are considered in the range, and then a our guy, quote unquote, which is the guy prospect we see 5 to 10 spots away maybe, but we really would like be pitching for the Suns to take. And then a dark horse, which is a guy more towards the first round bubble that we think should be under consideration. That's basically the Cam Johnson pick from last year. But there are really only four big men that seem like they are certified first round picks based on most big boards. And then there's a couple of guys who are anywhere from like 15 to 20 range to the first round bubble. So we can't even really get to that. That's seven guys we would have to get to. We would have to be really stretching it to get to that. So instead, we are going to be centralizing the conversation on two guys who, as it turns out, probably won't be available when the Suns pick, but we should hit on them in case they are available anyway, because it's a really interesting conversation we're going to get to, which is if these guys fall, should the Suns take them, which are Obi Toppin and Onyeka Okongwu. So we're going to be talking about those two the most in depth, and we're going to hit on just a couple of loose end guys that maybe we should at least discuss for a minute or two and bring them up, and then we'll get into in the coming weeks if they become more relevant. But where this conversation should start, Kevin, is the big situation for the Suns. If you have been reading ArizonaSports.com in the past week, hopefully you saw my three-part series, which took a look at the Suns' wing situation, then their cap situation, and then how a couple of mock off seasons, quote unquote, could go. And that second part specifically was looking at the half of the roster that they have to make roster decisions on. And that is pretty much their entire big rotation outside of DeAndre Ayton. It in fact is, Kevin. They've got Aron Baynes' unrestricted free agency, which has him on a cap hold. They've got Dario Saric's restricted free agency if they tender him a qualifying offer, which is to be expected at this point, mere formality type stuff. And then they've got Frank Kaminsky's $5 million player option. So they've got some things to figure out on the offseason that could directly influence the way they draft. But this is the funny twist and turn, Kevin, where free agency is after the draft. So I don't know. What's your take on this as a whole? Like just the possibility of the Suns taking a big, where their big situation is at and so on.
It's complicated because of, we'll get into this with the draft. I don't know that these guys will be necessarily there. The guys that you think would be good value at the number 10 pick. So honestly, I think the market is going to look round out to be where they're going to have to use free agency to go get, you know, a starting quality big or to make a trade for one. I think it's going to be a lot easier for them to find that third guard, whether that's before free agency in the trade or the draft. So I just am kind of curious about all this because I just think that that's And again, we don't really know who's going to be on the market. And it's not like you have your choice of all these options. Like, it's a pretty dry market. It's a weird year. We talked about that. So yeah, I mean, we keep talking about expecting the Suns to run it back. I think that they will try to keep one of the guys that they had on the roster last year, just out of pure necessity, just because, like, even if you get an upgrade in any other case, like, Dario's good off the bench. Frank would be fine if he's, like, the fourth big. So I think that that's probably the most realistic from my standpoint.
I agree. We'll get to it here in a bit, or at least I want to touch on how one of these guys, if they're on the board at 10, if they take them, who they potentially bring back, what the front court kind of looks like if they were to take someone like Toppin or Okongwu. So let's get to those two guys. We'll start with Obi Toppin, redshirt sophomore out of Dayton University, 22 years old. So he's certainly the thing that I wrote a couple months ago is that it's interesting that the most, like, seasoned and older, you'll look for, like, the older, more seasoned prospect. He is the one guy in this lottery picture that is over the age of 20, I believe, if I'm scrolling through right now and I have that correct. Yeah, so I believe the only other 20-year-old right now is Tyrese Haliburton, and Toppin's 22. 6'9", 6'11", wingspan, more of a power forward than a center, but I mean, if you're a big and you're a power forward, you're pretty much already kind of a center. It's that weird discussion that we've been having with that group the past couple of weeks we've been talking about. Weighs 220. He was the best player in college basketball last year. In 31 games, he averaged 20 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2.2 assists, a steal, and a block a game. He shot 63% from the field on 12.5 shots a game, including 39% from three on 2.5 attempts a game, 70% at the foul line. Two notable stats that we should hit on here that we'll talk about with him specifically when it comes to his strengths and weaknesses: 4.5 free throws a game, which really isn't that many, and then only 1.2 offensive rebounds a game. When you're talking about just such a physical force like him, I think you expect those numbers to be a little bit higher. On those three-point attempts, that was 82 total. He took 21 in the year before, in his redshirt freshman year, and he shot 11 of 21 on those threes. Really just a guy who, for lack of a better phrase, he dominated at his level and in his conference. The just, like, athletic, strong build of him on rim runs and just being an active body around the rim was really just, like, unstoppable for a lot of these teams. And the thing that really pushes him over the top at the level that he was playing at was his ability to make a dribble or two and either score or make a good decision out of it. I think, like, on short rolls specifically, that's where I was really intrigued by his potential offensively and where I really started to buy into the idea that he could kind of be an all-NBA type player. This is a guy that's ranked in the top five, it seems like, for most, but a lot of draft people are down on him because of the defense, which is pretty terrible, Kevin, worse than DeAndre Ayton's for sure, in my opinion, just because DeAndre at least had the athleticism, but I'm not even sure Toppin can really move. What do you think about him? We joked at the end of the last podcast that he's being compared to Amari, but there are legitimate comparisons there, right, in terms of just the offensive power that we're talking about. Like, we shouldn't make fun of him too much for it, because it's kind of there.
No, I mean, offensively, that the explosion is there, and just how he bounces off from different, like, takeoff platforms, I guess is the right phrase. I think that you probably watch more film as always, but I'm going to go on a rant about college basketball here. If you put him in an NBA spread offense where that 3-point line's further, I think that just the amount of pick and rolls that he could get involved in would be kind of scary. And when you talk about whether he's playing power forward, whether he's playing center, he's a really small center if he is going to play center, but I just think that the whole offensive, how the NBA works, is going to really benefit him. And look, you look at his numbers. He shot 66% as a freshman, 63% overall last year. I think he was shooting, let me pull this up, 83% at the rim. And people will be like, well, it's at the rim. But most of these college guys are at what? 70 is really good. most slots of guys are below 60. Guards are for sure. So 83%, that's ridiculous. He has the athleticism. I don't know about his frame being big enough to play center, but if he can add a little weight, that's going to go a long way. But you add in his 3-point shot, I think like you can make this work as an offensive player. He can fit in a lot of places, but that defense, I don't know. It's a physical thing more so when like Ben Simmons and those guys who were like, oh, they did not look, or DeAndre, you could at least say, oh, he could be good, right? I don't know about OB here.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that there are a couple of points with him where I really want to buy into him as a top five, like a no doubt top five guy that should be in the grouping with Hayes, Edwards, Wiseman, and Ball, kind of like rounding out like an Okongwu, in my opinion. And I feel like he should be good enough to kind of round out like that top six, being like a pretty good group. Like obviously like the amount of star power there is there, as we've talked about, but he should be in that conversation. The couple of things that throw me back on him is you mentioned the size. 6'9", 6'11", wingspan, 220. If you put him against a center on the block, he is going to get dominated. He's just not big enough. He's not strong enough. And then if you put him, I mean, laterally guarding fours, there's no contest. But I even think that like some – like you think of like Paul Millsap as your prototypical power forward right now with like the body at least. Like I think those guys overpower him even. Yeah. I just think he's a little bit too small and a little bit too nimble. Which is funny because we're talking about like a really strong and if you look at him like a big bulky guy, like his shoulders are humongous. But I think that he still, when you watch him, you just get the sense that he's not powerful enough in those actual spots. Whereas when you see him finishing and like getting through to the rim and like and dunking and everything, you think he's just this absolute force. But it actually doesn't play through in the rest of his game. And that's why I mentioned the rebounding again. He should be averaging at least like 9-10. This should be a guy that's averaging like 12.5 rebounds a game. Like, I'm sorry, especially playing in the A-10 for him.
Yeah.
He should have just been an absolute force there, and he wasn't. And the 1.2 offensive rebounds, we're going to hit on Okongwu here in a second. He averaged 3.3 offensive rebounds a game. Precious Achiuwa is someone we're going to be talking about. He was in the AAC for Memphis, so a lower-level division, 10.8 rebounds a game, 3 offensive rebounds a game. Like, that's what Toppin should have been doing, and he wasn't. So the rebounding and the defending are the two little defending on the ball, like in post situations, like 18 feet in essentially, and not like pick and roll and help side stuff and all that kind of stuff. I think that he could have picked up enough value there to still be not, I don't say valuable enough because those are such small little niche things when ultimately like his main defensive role is going to get picked apart. I think he could have just gotten a little bit more there. And then again, I worry, I think that he's been fast enough and I like the decisions on the short roll, but I worry that like this turn that this position has made in like the last 10 years, I think DeMarcus Cousins was like the first guy who really went in this draft when you look at him and he's like not only the strongest guy on the court, but maybe even like the fastest in some situations or quickest. Like that generation of athlete, obviously DeAndre Ayton is like a recent example as well. You should look at the centers that are coming along and it's like, is he going to be able to beat some of these centers off the dribble even? Like, is that a mismatch for him technically? I'm not 100% sure. Am I being too harsh on him?
I'm just thinking if we had a regular off season here and we had a workout, let's say, I know these guys are probably too highly rated, but if we went to summer league, let's say, and Obi Toppin was faced up against Denny Adia, because, I mean, we included him in the wing group, so we're not going to talk about him. But if they matched up, which physically they could match up in a game probably, and Denny was blowing by him, then you would just – your red flags would go up on the first day of watching summer league and be like, oh, no. And we don't know that, and we won't be able to see that. But that's the type of fear that I would have, where a guy who doesn't have that great of athleticism is just beating him off the bounce. Like that's what the concerns were.
Ultimately, this is nitpicking just because I want to make clear that I am not down on this guy just because of the defense being so bad. I think there are just other little areas where I have small concerns. The 3-point shot isn't on a humongous amount of volume either. So like, it's not like he's a bona fide stretch 4 or stretch 5 from the jump. I worry that he's kind of almost a tweener a little bit. And like all these little concerns that I have on top of the huge red flag of his pick and roll defense, which is just as bad as you'd expect it to be. And like, if you've been only hearing about this and not really watching the highlights or whatever, trust me, Toppin's like pick and roll defense, the way that he moves, like I joked on Twitter, like he moves like he's had 45 hip surgeries. Like he just doesn't have hips anymore. I don't really understand it. I guess this is where we can kind of hit on, actually let's go to Okongwu first and kind of move on. And then we'll talk about like him potentially in Phoenix. Cause I actually believe in the fit in Phoenix after saying all of that really negative stuff on him. So Onyeka Okongwu, out of USC, coming off his freshman year, 19 years old, 6'9" with a 7'1" wingspan, weighs 245. That's a much bigger frame than Toppin. Like those extra 25 pounds, the extra couple of inches on the wingspan. Man, he was great. He averaged 16 points, 9 rebounds a game. Like we said, 3 offensive rebounds a game. He shot 61% from the field on 10 shots a game. Didn't really take threes. There's not really much stretch appeal at this point. 4 attempts from 3-point range at all, so he didn't really take them at all. 5 free throws a game, 72% on those. He averaged 2.7 blocks, a steal, and an assist a game as well. Kevin, my pitch on Okongwu has been that he is the one guy in this draft that I believe is going to be a good player more than any other guy in this class. If I had been on one person in this class to be a quote-unquote good NBA player, a.k.a. you can rely on them for 24 playoff minutes in a couple of years, I really think that he is the one guy I'm going to bet on more than anyone else. It's just a lot of high floor stuff with him, the way that he moves defensively, the way that he gets active offensively, the way he seeks out blocks and the way he face guards guys like guards. There's a lot of DeAndre Ayton kind of stuff there with the way that he sticks on guards. I really love his fluidity and just 1-2 dribble moves. That's where comparing him to someone like DeAndre, I just think he's like not miles ahead, but it's exactly what you want DeAndre to be good at, where he just gets into guys. Like if you want to talk about guys playing like a force, this is the guy, right, Kevin?
Yeah, I would, just so Suns fans can kind of compare it. I see him moving like Marquise Chris, but he knows like what he's supposed to be as a player.
I like
he
that.
He knows he's a little more sculpted, has a little more weight, but he's just that smooth as an athlete, and that's what makes him so good switching. I could see him playing 4 or 5, and I could see him being able to guard some threes and at least hang with wings on switches. And that's where I think you're making the DeAndre comparison. But I just think he knows what he's good at. He's physical. He goes, gets boards. He's really good just feel for blocking shots and that kind of thing. And he's – I don't know how old he is. I don't have it up, but he's a freshman. So, I mean, it's just a solid package. I think it would be a safe move, and I think that's why I would be surprised if he dropped past, like, 6'7".
Give him Wiseman's like extra couple of inches, like he's 7'1" with a 7'6" wingspan. He's the number one pick in the number one pick in this draft without question. I'm not even talking about like the way Wiseman moves either. Just give him the extra like height and wingspan, and he'd be there for sure. I just think he is good. He's just, whether it's like the first big off the bench and you can play him against certain matchups or stuff, I just think he really knows how to play, and I think that there's a lot of upside there. The obvious limitations on him: only 6'9", so. Again, we're talking about this new breed of centers, like we just mentioned, Wiseman. You have to worry that he's going to be a little bit too small to play the 5 at times. And then if you play him at the 4, you're not getting a jump shot right now. He's been taking some mid-range jumpers. I'll have to go pull up the numbers and look right now, but I believe the numbers were fine. The guy he's going to get compared to ad nauseum, and I guarantee you're going to see a highlight reel of it during the NBA draft at some point, the televised event, is him and Bam Adebayo. There's obvious appeal there between the two of them. I just really like his game. He's a guy that's been ranked kind of more in the 5-8 group than the 2-4 group in around like the first half of the year. But as we get close to the draft, it seems like he's more solidified that he's not going to slip past 6 or 7 or just really anything like that. I think that he's got a pretty safe floor in this draft, and I'd be very surprised if he was on the board for the Suns. Do you have any like serious hesitations with him? Because I really don't. He plays so much bigger than his size that I'm not worried about the size. Should we be worried about the jumper? Does that matter? No. I don't think it really matters.
No, I mean, I think he's a center. If he doesn't develop a jumper, and he's a good enough shooter, where I'm feeling good about it, and I don't really have any red flags with him. It's just a matter of how much you think he can expand his game, which again is not why you're taking him really high.
No, correct. So speaking of taking him high, here's the draft order, Kevin, and talking about these two guys and if they fall to the Suns. So let's just assume the top three is Edward, Wiseman, Ball in some sort of order. You've got the Bulls at four, who are in desperate need of a guard, and you've got Halliburton, Hayes, maybe even Ball is still there. Probably that's too high for Kyra Lewis, but honestly, like, who knows? But I think the Bulls taking a guard at four is pretty much a certainty. Cleveland at five is where maybe one of these guys goes. Apparently, I think I read maybe in O'Connor's latest mock that Cleveland likes Toppin. They've obviously got Garland and Sexton. They could add a wing, though. That's where, like, Okoro, Abdia, maybe Devin Vassell fits in. Atlanta at six and Detroit at seven both seem like they'll take pretty much any position. Atlanta obviously has Trae Young, but they could use another ball handler. They have Herter as well, but not really a secondary ball handler type guy, and they really want a backup for Trae. And they could look at that and just kind of look at like a three-guard rotation, kind of like what we've been talking about the Suns. The Knicks at eight, I mean, like, they're not going to take Anthony Edwards because he's another R.J. Barrett type. Other than that, I think they could take anyone. And then the Wizards at nine, again, like, they've got Wall and Beal, but a guard there wouldn't surprise me. I think it's like a long-winded way of me saying, Kevin, that I don't really see where the draft positionally in the 4-9 group locks in these two bigs going for sure. And I think that one of them could be available at 10. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it's worth discussing and why we just spent 10 minutes talking about those two guys. Am I crazy? Do you see it?
If we have all of our guys going up, if we include Abdia, if it's only going to take what, a couple guys jumping into that top 10 for them, one of those guys to potentially drop. I mean, if you say like Vassell, Okoro, Abdia, Patrick Williams are all top 10 picks, then definitely I think Okongwu or Toppin would fall. I don't know which one do you think is more volatile. Like,
here's mine. Edwards, Wiseman, Ball, top three. Hayes goes four to Chicago. Five, Abdia goes to Cleveland. Six is Halliburton to the Hawks. Seven, Okoro to the Pistons. Eight, Kyra Lewis to the Knicks. And then nine, Vassell to the Wizards. So that would be Kyra Lewis jumping up. And then that would be, who else did I not mention there? I didn't mention someone else, but Kyra jumping and then Halliburton jumping. I think those two jumping, quote unquote, I think those guys going in the top nine as opposed to Okongwu and Toppin is where I get it. And then Hayes, I guess, is the other one. I put him in the top five, but that's honestly how I see it. But I asked you kind of before we started recording, I already have a big board up. I'm going to update one before we get going on the draft fully, like probably the week before the draft, maybe next week, somewhere in there. I'm going to update my big board. Currently, I have both of these guys in my top five on the Suns board just because I envision a role for both of them on this team, despite DeAndre's placing. Do you agree? Do you have them both inside? Probably not that high, right? Probably not both top five, but do you have them both as top 10? Like, would you say they are the best available both if they are either's on the board at 10?
Yeah, I don't think I couldn't see being torn about, or even in a scenario where two of them are on the board where I would have to think about it. I mean, Toppin's just an obvious fit as far as position. You make it work with DeAndre. If DeAndre's starting to shoot more threes, then you do have a rim roller still on the other side of the floor if you want. And he obviously can shoot threes too. So I think the fit works. Having DeAndre makes it easier to have a bad defender like that. And, you know, Okongwu seems redundant, but hey, if you got a guy who's going to force his way onto the court, I don't think that's a problem. Worst case, you trade him for someone who's a better fit down the road when that becomes available. But yeah, I think just at 10, they'd be really lucky for either of those guys to fall.
I agree, and I just think that you could do a lot worse than, like, say you bring back Saric, and then your three bigs are Saric and Ayton, with Saric and then one of these rookies coming off the bench, basically, and that fills out, like, the entirety of your big rotation, essentially. And then if Saric moves on, then it's just, like, literally Ayton and then this center, like Okongwu or Toppin, who fills in the minutes behind DeAndre, and then when you want to open up some minutes for that guy at the four, if you want to. Like, I really do think Okongwu is good enough defensively where you could play him at the four. Obviously, defensively, you would need, like, a stretch five or something to play with him. So, like, Saric and Okongwu together, like, I don't necessarily hate it. And then Toppin, obviously, there are defensive concerns. I don't even look at taking Toppin top five, like, on having him top five on a big board as him starting with eight in the long term. I just really view it as, like, you would have a certified offensive threat off of the bench at this position that would be unique. And in a way where I really don't think he would get picked on as meticulously as people think. I think that, like, when he comes on the floor, he would be targeted, obviously, but I don't think they're going to run every single possession at him. That is not really something that happens that much in regular NBA games. Now, in the postseason, of course, that's when it becomes an issue. But I think they could really get away with it. And then obviously with DeAndre's versatility defensively, that just really opens the door for playing guys like this. And again, like, in that situation that I talked about, Kevin, you've got Kyra Lewis, Haliburton, and Hayes off the board, which in our opinion, on our last episode, are the three best point guards that they could potentially take. That's not counting LaMelo Ball. I mean, you're talking about Nesmith, Bay, Williams, which are some of the wings that we hit on earlier. We're going to hit on a couple of bigs after this that are kind of in that range, but there really isn't anyone that worthy of the pick available at 10 anyway. I just think it would make a lot of sense.
It'd be a no-brainer if that happens.
Worst thing comes of it, you find a team that, like, loves one of those guys, had him as a top five guy, and you can just trade it. You can trade out of it. Like, it's,
yeah.
There's a lot of different ways you can go with that. Like, let's say Okongwu's awesome, but you can't play him with Ayton. Okay. Well, now you can just trade Okongwu for something, like, really important, as opposed to taking, like, taking Desmond Bane, basically, and then just having him as, like, the fourth or fifth wing on your team. I think there's some logic to it. Let's fly through a couple of these other bigs that we should kind of hit on. Precious Achiuwa is someone who I've mentioned on the timeline and mentioned in here just briefly. I love him just because I don't think there are a lot of guys that fit his athletic profile. So Achiuwa, a freshman big out of Memphis, 6'9", 7'2" wingspan, 20 years old, weighs 225. We mentioned the rebounding, nearly 11 a game with three offensive rebounds a night. He had 16 points to go with that, a steal, a block, two blocks a game, and then an assist a game as well. Only shot 49% from the field, though, on 12 attempts a game. Took 1.3 threes a game, shot 32.5% on those 40 total attempts. I think DeAndre's number was 40 as well. And then, 60% from the line, Kevin, on six attempts a game. Here's what you need to know about Achiuwa. He has the Pascal Siakam build, which is this wiry but tough and energetic big man who rebounds like a madman and is just everywhere on the glass. But he can also really handle the ball and make some passes. As I wrote it, though, the problem is he understands that he can be Pascal Siakam, and he wants to be Pascal Siakam, and he's trying to be Pascal Siakam right now. That is why he shot 49% from the field. I believe his, like, mid-range jumper numbers, or just his shooting numbers on twos jumpers, were just terrible, and that's really where he struggled. His percentage around the rim was awesome. And really just the belief in taking this guy is you dial him back significantly, have him focus on rim running defense, because, like, watching him switch on to guards, man, he was just eating these guys alive at some points. I really loved what I saw with him on the ball. Obviously there were brain farts in there that you'd expect for a player like him, but I like him. He makes no sense for the Suns, Kevin. They wouldn't want to put up with a kid like this, but I think he's fascinating and a fun name to keep an eye on.
Who should I go with? I'm gonna go really weird here, and I'm gonna go Isaiah Stewart out of Washington.
Oh,
And he's like a back end, kind of end of first round type, but he is intriguing because he has a shot, and he's kind of undersized, 250, 6'9". I don't know. He just he kind of seems like this guy who's going to be a really good shooter to me, and I don't know why I'm thinking that. He's an interesting guy. Zeke Nagy out of Arizona is a guy I think we just got to mention because he was super efficient. I think, what was it, like three or four games, his first three or four games, he just didn't miss a shot. And what's weird about him is he apparently has a three-point jumper, but he just never did it because he played at Arizona.
Shout out Sean Miller, the guy.
Yeah, thanks for using your all of your skill.
Great coach. Guys. Lucky to have him. What a recruiter.
And then my dude who is considered a second-round pick, who I'm just going to shout out, Daniel Aturu. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. But he's kind of like a less good at basketball Okongwu. He averages 2.5 blocks a game, 20 points, 11 rebounds, very productive in his sophomore season. And he does kind of have a shot. He took like 1.7 per game, shot 36.5%. So if his turnover numbers are ridiculous. I don't know why. 2.8 a game, man. But yikes. Hey, if you're talking about a late first round pick, maybe. But he's after that. It's kind of just I don't even know what's there.
O'Connor's sentence summary on him is a roller coaster. It says throwback big man with an improved 3-point shooter. He made dramatic overall progress from his freshman to sophomore seasons, but is still an unfinished project. Yeah. So like he's a throwback big man who I don't even know what that means.
He's very. Yeah, he's a low post guy, but he did have a shot, kind of. I don't know. He's more of a project, though. I think. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm surprised that there has not been a lot of Alexei Pokusevsky hype yet. I expected everyone to watch enough tape of this guy and fall in love with him and just on their knees begging for their team to take this guy. Hasn't quite happened yet, at least from what I've been seeing, at least on Suns Twitter and like in other places, I haven't really seen it. So if you're not familiar, Pokusevsky, 18 years old, plays in the second division in Greece, 7 feet tall, 7'3" wingspan, weighs 201 pounds apparently, which is very, very generous. Like I would not say that. He did not really play much for Olympiacos, a secondary team in the secondary division. He went through an injury, but even when he was playing 23 minutes a game. He started 8 of his 11 games. But he played under 10 total minutes of EuroLeague basketball for Olympiacos' senior team. So he just didn't really get in the mix at all. When you watch him, Kevin, you're expecting like super – you watch the highlights and you're thinking like, okay, this is like a flashy point forward who can really handle the ball for his size and just fluidity and all that kind of stuff. I more see a guy who should be a spot-up shooter and just more of a shooting threat. I think that he has a really good-looking shot and on – the numbers, they're not the greatest. They're around like 32-33% was what he was at. Again, like the total numbers that Real GM has down for three total years is under 20 games. I think it's around like 25 maybe to 30, but it's such a small sample size statistically. You got to go with what you're seeing and what you saw from some of the FIBA under 18 stuff. And I just saw a guy who's extremely not ready yet. He needs to really work on his physicality. There were times where he could just use his length on defense in so many different ways, and he just didn't want to. And whether that was like effort or being soft or whatever, I really just like he was rather infuriating, in fact, to watch because I think that he has some top 15 appeal to him, which is where you'll see him. But I think that he's so far away, especially with like the sloppy turnovers and just really trying these flashy dribbles out of nowhere. Like he is such a young, young player when you watch him, but he is as fluid as he looks at that size. Like Dragan Bender always seemed like a little bit more clunky than he should be at his size, given like the length and the, like he wasn't a bruiser by any means, but he kind of wasn't moving as fluidly as he should in like his quicker movements. But Pokusevsky has that kind of like the junior version of what Durant does at that size. Like just as a ball handler, like I see it.
He's like a few years away from being Dragan Bender. Is that what you're saying?
He's a few years away from being ready for like professional minutes in Europe. Like the reason we clamored so much about Luka being the best player in Europe was because of guys like this who can't even sniff senior team action. They have to be relegated to their secondary team, their junior team, essentially, for Olympiacos. And they're like, he's a couple years away from being ready to start for Olympiacos. So he's an interesting guy to draft and just stash. Like, if they love this kid and they hate everyone else in this draft and they just draft him and put him overseas for a couple of years and see what comes of it, like a stretch playmaking four, and then he figures out how to be tough on defense because he can move. It's there. Do you see the Jalen Smith stuff at all to close it out on one more guy that we should mention, or no? Because
I just see the athletic profile that's better fitting than any of the guys I mentioned. He has the length. He has shooting. I don't know. What do you think about him? I guess if you're at like 20, yeah, but
yeah, I could see people putting him as high as like 15 on a Suns board. I think I put him around like 18 on my last one. I don't mind him. 15.5 points, 10.5 rebounds, shot 54% from the field. From three, he was at 37% on 2.8 attempts, and then over his college career, 158 attempts, 32% from three, 71% at the line. Just really fluid when he shot the ball. He did not just look like a catch and shoot big. Like, they had him going off movement. He can take a dribble or two as well and attack closeouts and looks extremely confident doing it. It's like one of his signature really things to do on the court. The trouble is, I think he's just like a little bit too small to play like big time 5 minutes. Like, he was just a guy that I watched and I wondered if he could play the five full time, because I think that's where you want him, because I didn't really like the perimeter defense a ton. So there's some obvious like stretch five appeal, because he's athletic enough for sure in certain strides. But again, like, to take it back to top, and just doesn't really move that well in some stretches, but the shot blocking was there. I didn't mention that 2.4 blocks a game for him, but under an assist, under a steal per game. But he's a guy who will go in the first round probably, and maybe he'll find a home in like the late lottery for some team that's desperate to look elsewhere in among that group. But overall, it's a really underwhelming group, right, Kev?
Yep. There's like this void between 10 and 20 where it's like, I don't know where Okongwu and the next guy, like, how close is the next four or five? It might be Jalen Smith, and even if it's 15, that's still kind of a big void.
Yeah, luckily for the NBA teams, at least, like, what they're looking for, like, wings and ball handlers more than anything right now. Like, this is certainly a draft for it, and it's not really – there was that really weird – was that DeAndre's draft, 2018? The Carter, Bamba, Jaren Jackson Jr., Ayton, was that all the draft? Bagley, too, where it was like, oh, my gosh. Like, are five teams in the top 10 really going to take a big man after what we've been seeing the past couple of years? And indeed they did. It's working out to some ways
for most of them, yeah.
Some of those teams, yeah, it's been working out pretty well. I think it's like Bamba's probably the one you're the most worried about. I think Carter is a big year for him, but Bagley looked good when he's out there healthy. Jaren's been pretty good, and DeAndre's been pretty great. So,
yeah,
worked out. Sometimes the talented basketball players just figure it out, Kevin.
That's true. That's how I like to scout them. You know, you want to go after the talented guys, the ones who are good at basketball. Yeah,
indeed. All right, we're gonna close it out there. Next week is officially going to be when we, on the .com at least, really lean into this being draft season, because the Cardinals are conveniently going on a bye week after they play Seattle on Sunday, so we're really going to have not much to talk about at all. So we're going to fully make it draft season over there. You'll have these pods, and then we'll just kind of get into more of hopefully that'll kind of start up the conversations around the league. We'll start to hear some buzz about potential trades and all that, and if not, we can kind of get more into what I wrote about this past week, which is really all the potential scenarios the Suns have, how their first round pick factors into that, and what they're going to do on draft night and more. We should give a shout out to Zona before we go, right, Kevin, the Sunnies?
Yes, thank you for putting that together, and congrats to Kellen for being the MVP. Hey. Do you have a speech? Do you have a speech prepared before we go?
Absolutely not. I forget that people listening here are sometimes only listening to the pod and they're not on Twitter or anything. But I mean, if you want to get integrated into Twitter, that is now the best resource by far. If you're a Suns fan and you've been on the fence about making a Twitter, or like I tell people, like, just you think it's this toxic place and stuff, just follow like 50 Suns accounts, and it's just like you're just a Suns fan on there. And that's really,
yeah, you're just in this nice padded bubble of being miserable together.
And,
yeah.
And if you see someone pop up that may or may not be president on your timeline, just block them and you never have to see them like someone else on this podcast does. So they're never in their life like that. But yeah, so go to check out Zona Sports on Twitter. He tweeted out the link. It's just basically what he thinks are the best Twitter accounts on for the Suns, and it's a list of that has Kevin and me on it and like about 90 other people on it. Follow those 90 people and you'll be having a fun time with all of us and on Twitter. I promise we have fun. And even through the worst of times the past couple of years, we've always found a way to make ourselves laugh and have fun. So shout out to him for putting that together. And like I said, like I would encourage it more as a resource than anything else. So hopefully someone listening will make a Twitter account on there and join us on Twitter, because we all need a laugh right now with the way the world is. And that's the best place to do it. Oh, it's a really sweet note to end the podcast on, Kevin.
I don't like it.
I feel fantastic. I feel
good about it. Yeah.
You're the real MVP, Kevin. Okay. We'll see you next time. Bye.